Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the entire internet. First to the docket, Lori Vallow had a good day. Second, can the officer charged in the Breonna Taylor case receive a fair trial in Louisville? Third, a clear example of how a lawyer can go to jail. Fourth, Danny Masterson pleads not guilty. Another teacher case. The worst cook in America winner is charged with homicide. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so already, please hit that little subscribe button as well as that little bell so that you can receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And as always, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And to be honest, I think we've really stepped up our Facebook and Instagram game. So go check it out. Now, first on the docket, Lori Vallow had a good day. Why do you think I say she had a good day? Well, there was a lot of speculation that somehow the police in Phoenix were reopening the investigation regarding the death of her third husband. Well, it turns out that the police did in fact review the death investigation related to Joseph Ryan. And they originally determined that he had died of natural causes. Detectives reopened the investigation after an October 2018 audio recording of Miss Vallow came to light with her saying that she was, quote, going to murder, end quote, Ryan. Well, guess what the results were? That's right. Joseph Ryan still died of natural causes, and there's no way of saying that Lori Vallow had anything to do with it. Not surprising, as I had mentioned previously before, if they were going to charge Lori Vallow with the death of her previous husbands, it would have been done by now. Frankly, the conversation that we've listened to where she said she was going to kill him, a lot of people were fired up about that recording because she somehow tried to explain or justify killing Ryan using scriptures. And Ryan was the father of Daybell's daughter, Tylee Ryan. As we all know, Vallow's fourth husband, Charles Vallow, was shot and killed by Vallow's brother, Alex Cox, back in 2019. That investigation remains open, as does the investigation into Tammy Daybell's death. That's right, Chad Daybell's wife. And as we also remember, Chad Daybell married Lori Vallow some 2 weeks after his wife Tammy's death. Because that's normal, right? But just because it's odd doesn't mean that there was anything criminal about it. If there was, I think that the police would have charged something by now. And I think they've had more than sufficient time for the autopsy results to come back. So I don't think there's going to be any charges. And as we've talked about before, at least if I was going to try that case, I would pin everything on Alex Cox as the one responsible for the deaths of Tylee and JJ, and simply state that the two defendants sitting at the defense table these days, Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell, that neither one of them had anything to do with the deaths of the children. And how were they supposed to know that these bodies were on the property? That's the simple defense. I'm not sure why it's taking so long to get to trial on this. Now, there has been an order that was issued just the other day regarding a notice of hearing. As you may recall, the initial hearing in the Lori Vallow Chad Daybell matter regarding the motion to dismiss as well as the motion for change of venue was set several weeks ago. But we didn't get to that important legal issue because we had to sit through a day and a half of hearings regarding the allegations made by Mr. Means stating that the prosecutor, Mr. Wood, was in fact intimidating witness, engaging in criminal conduct, and just basically being an unethical person. Well, the hearing was held, and after the hearing, the court determined that Mr. Wood did nothing unethical, did nothing improper, and that he would not be removed from the case. So, the motion to dismiss and motion for change of venue are now set for March 22nd of 2021 at 9 a.m. before, once again, the Honorable Judge Stephen W. Boyce. The motion to dismiss is not going anywhere. Probable cause has been found, and there's nothing in the record or the lack thereof that would indicate that probable cause did not exist for the case to go forward. Understand the legal standard at the preliminary hearing, which Lori Vallow cannot contest this motion to dismiss because guess what? She waived her preliminary hearing, thereby giving up the right to challenge probable cause. The motion for change of venue may get a little play in this particular case. As you may recall, for our Patreon viewers, we had a person that lived in Rexburg, Idaho, that explained that everybody in that jurisdiction has pretty much made up their mind and is aware of the case. That would be a good basis to move the case if it was so overwhelming based upon opinions in the community that neither Lori Vallow or Chad Daybell would be able to get a fair trial. More than likely, unless the judge has some inclination based upon his own anecdotal participation in the community, he will more than likely wait until jury trial selection, which is known as voir dire, to see if they can in fact seat a jury. Just because people know about a case, that is not the prerequisite to removing the case. Legal requirement is that you have to be able to be unable to seat a jury and unable to find jurors that are willing to listen to the evidence, reserve judgment, and make their decision at the close of the evidence. If everyone who showed up for jury duty said they were already aware of the case and that they'd already formed an opinion about the case, then that would be a good basis to move the case. We'll just have to wait and see. My theory is you bring in enough jurors, you're going to be able to find 12 that have been buried under a rock and don't know anything about this case. Next on the docket, can the police officer charged in the Breonna Taylor case get a fair trial? The attorney representing Brett Haskins, who is a former Louisville, Kentucky police officer and who has actually been fired, believes that his client cannot receive a fair trial and that he intends to file for a change of venue. The same legal standard that applies when we just discussed the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell matter applies here. Louisville is a big city. You will more than likely be able to find 12 jurors who will not have formed an opinion as to the case. Once again, just because they know about the case doesn't mean they're ineligible to sit on the jury. And for those who don't recall, Breonna Taylor was shot and killed during a March 13th raid back in 2019 at her Louisville apartment after officers with a no-knock warrant broke down her door seeking evidence in a narcotics investigation. No drugs were found at the home. Her family ultimately filed a lawsuit against the city and was awarded in a settlement some $12 million. Former Officer Haskinson, he's been charged with first-degree wanton endangerment because although he did fire shots that day, his shots went into a neighboring apartment. What's going to be interesting about this case as the motions proceed is what information would actually be presented to the jury. It could be sanitized rather easily by simply stating that he was there to exercise a raid on a house, never mentioning the name Breonna Taylor, and simply stating that the rounds went into an adjacent apartment from where all the action was, which would make one believe that maybe they weren't doing a very good job putting people in danger. That's right, wanton endangerment, when you're doing things that are reckless. Without due regard for the safety of others around you, you're probably getting quite close to reckless endangerment for sure. Mr. Haskins' attorney hasn't filed the motion just yet. We'll see what kind of play it gets from the court. But once again, I think Louisville is a large enough city, they will be able to get enough jurors for that case. Next on the docket, take a look at this video. If you want to see the easiest way for an attorney to be held in contempt, this is an example of it.
Your Honor, it's my motion at this time to withdraw from this case.
No, ma'am. That motion's denied.
Why?
Because
he won't accept the plea, and he's going contrary. He won't accept the... Ma'am, I've been to the jail 5 times. He's flooding the toilets. He's causing disturbances. He's fighting. He's been beat up. He's calling me 12 times a day.
You are disparaging your client to this court.
Okay, well, the bottom line is, my advice to him, ma'am, is to take the deal. If he's not going to do that, then I'm withdrawing from this case.
Ma'am,
I've already been to the jail 5 times, Your Honor, to talk to him.
The withdrawal is denied.
I bet I don't appear again. Goodbye.
Okay, I would like to make a contempt motion for Ms. O'Neill.
A Louisville attorney by the name of Shamika O'Neill appeared via phone during a Zoom conference for a docket call. These are pretty normal these days in the new Zoom world that we live in. The judge, Judge Julie Kalin, had expected that the defendant in this particular case, Curtis Burns, was going to plead guilty to misdemeanor charges. But Mr. Burns refused to accept the deal. O'Neill told the judge that her client suffered from mental illness and that she wished to withdraw from the case as the counsel for Mr. Burns. It was clear that Ms. O'Neill was rather frustrated that Mr. Burns wouldn't take the deal. But guess what? Go try the case. That's what attorneys do. Well, Ms. O'Neill then gets hot and heavy with the judge as the judge says, "You're not going to withdraw." Ms. O'Neill then begins to disparage her client on the record, saying that he has mental illness, he's a disciplinary problem in the jail, things that you as an attorney cannot say about your client in court for the world to see. You are an advocate. You're supposed to zealously represent them and only reveal information as you have to. That was completely unnecessary, no doubt. And when Ms. O'Neill asked that she be allowed to withdraw from the case and the judge said no, that's right, she hung up. The judge then said, "I make a motion for contempt." And as you can see from the other participants on the Zoom call, they were shocked by the attorney's conduct. I was shocked by the attorney's conduct. We've all had clients that have caused great frustration, but guess what? You go try the case. You document that they're proceeding against your advice and you go to trial. You do what you have to do. You don't hang up on the judge. You don't walk out of the courtroom. Now, Ms. O'Neill faces up to 90 days in jail and a $500 fine. Now, if one is held in contempt by the court issues a motion for show cause. Show cause as to why you shouldn't be held in contempt. Normally, I can tell you from personal experience, I received one show cause in my days as an attorney, and that was simply because I was going to start a trial and the jury hadn't been brought up yet. The person that was going to cover another case in the courtroom for me didn't show up, so I ran upstairs to do a quick guilty plea. I was literally at the podium when my client was entering his guilty plea, and I had a sheriff standing behind me saying, "The judge wants you downstairs." Well, I assure you, the judge where I was appearing before the court for the guilty plea, I would much rather be held in contempt from the judge down below. So when I showed up down below, the judge said, "I've issued an order for show cause, bring in the jury." Not a good way to get the morning started with your client, seeing you're being held in contempt potentially. Needless to say, I won the case that day. I then went back a few days later for my show cause hearing. I explained the situation to the judge. I apologized, meaning no disrespect, and the judge withdrew the contempt citation. Now here, Ms. O'Neill would do well to have apologized to the court and basically say her emotions and frustration got the best of her. But no, Ms. O'Neill appeared before that judge the same day and said to the court, quote, "Mark my words, if you take adverse actions against me, you better be sure about it because you made some mistakes here today. I will attempt to hold you civilly or however responsible that I can, and that's my word. End quote from Miss O'Neill. Now, obviously, Miss O'Neill can do whatever she wants. She doesn't work for me, that's for sure. But I think if she has a mentor, someone would tell her it would do her well to go and apologize. Next on the docket, actor Danny Masterson has pled not guilty to the 3 counts of sexual assault following his arrest this past summer. The now former 70s show star was arrested in June and charged with 3 counts of sexual assault by force or fear. The Los Angeles District Attorney's Office had previously declined to file charges in connection to 2 additional allegations of sexual assault, citing the statute of limitations in one case and a lack of sufficient evidence in another. Obviously, a jury will never hear about those 2 matters. Mr. Masterson has denied the allegations, stating that he and his wife are in complete shock, considering these allegations are nearly 20 years old and are suddenly resulting in charges being filed. But they know that the truth will come out, and the lawyer for Mr. Masterson is a gentleman by the name of Mr. Thomas Mesereau. Now, Mr. Mesereau, he is a very interesting guy. And I mean that in a good way. I really do. Mr. Mesereau has obviously represented lots of celebrities in his day. And I saw an interview with him, which I thought was rather interesting. And in an interview, he was asked about his challenges that he faces with celebrity representations. And he said, and I thought it was very interesting, he says that many celebrities have an unrealistic view of the courtroom. Because they've seen trials on television and in film, they think they're experts. They don't realize that trials operate very differently, even counterintuitively to what they believe and what people imagine it to be. And to convince these celebrities that they are pure novices is somewhat difficult. I can relate to Mr. Mesereau's challenges because everybody thinks these days that they can Google it and they've seen trials on TV, so how difficult could it possibly be? He also states that celebrities operate with a different value system. What they consider true performance is often a trial disaster waiting to happen. Effectiveness in the courtroom requires a strong measure of humility, decency, respect, and patience. He said that he's also found that talented salespeople and politicians tend to do very poorly on the witness stand. Their successful performance outside the courtroom deceives them into wanting to utilize the same practices at trial. They usually do very poorly without even realizing it. He says that narcissists not only tend to do very poorly, but also completely misperceive the negative effects on the jury. While they celebrate their brilliance, the jurors scowl. He also adds that the other problem with celebrities is that they have numerous sycophants, enablers, and losers in their entourage, and these sundry types have a vested interest in keeping the celebrity suspicious in order to create a need for themselves. They can be a tremendous problem and a continuing distraction throughout the case. I found that rather interesting and very true as it relates to matters that I've handled over the years. When you go into a courtroom, you have to be humble. You must be humble. You cannot fool jurors. There are a lot of not intelligent people in the world, but jurors, if they've been selected, usually get it right, and those 12 jurors can see through the BS. I have learned over my time as a defense attorney, you cannot lie to a jury. They will punish you if they believe that you are trying to deceive them. Next on the docket, another teacher case. That's right, a New Jersey teacher has been busted for sexting with undercover cops he thought was actually a 14-year-old boy. Please meet Jesse Rosenbaum, 65, a teacher at the Long Branch Middle School, was arrested and charged with attempted endangering the welfare of a child. Authorities had been investigating Rosenbaum after the allegation surfaced that he was soliciting boys online to participate in sexual acts and sexually charged conversations. During the course of their investigation, an undercover officer pretending to be a 14-year-old boy was targeted by Rosenbaum, who called the teen and sent the undercover cop sexually explicit emails and texts. And yes, that's right. It is a crime to solicit things from police, even if you think that they are young children on the other end. It is still a crime. So that defense of it's a police officer doesn't work. Additionally, do you remember when somebody told you, if you write that letter or you send that email, think to yourself, how would this look if you were to have this email or letter put on the front page of the newspaper in your community? Ask yourself that, right? You must always talk on the telephone, assuming that somebody is recording you on the other end. And you should also assume if somebody is engaging in some sort of sexual talk with them, you have to be absolutely certain that that person is over the age of 18. Absolutely certain. And if it's not, guess what? You are committing a crime. A crime that could result in you having to register as a sex offender, or even, worst case scenario, go to prison. Simply do not do it. Let's be honest. Does anyone really think that a 14-year-old is really interested in some 65-year-old guy? Use your common sense. No, they're not. So although we give Mr. Rosenbaum the presumption of innocence, I don't think he's going to be teaching at a local middle school near you anytime soon. Which is a good segue into CrimeTalkSearch.com. That's right. If you feel uncertain about anybody, if there's someone you're getting to know and you'd like to know more about them and you just feel maybe they're not telling me anything, go to CrimeTalkSearch.com. Sign up for thy background subscription service, whereby you can anonymously search as many people as you would like, and you are going to receive a report after literally millions of public records are searched in the United States, and you're going to get information back regarding criminal history. Has somebody like Mr. Rosenbaum ever been charged with a crime involving children? You'd probably want to know those things. Has he been convicted? Is he a registered sex offender? What kind of property does he own? In that report, you're going to get information regarding property records, divorce records, things you want to know if people are not telling you the truth or you get a feeling they're not telling you the truth. Sign up, crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, the winner of a worst cook in America has been charged with homicide by child abuse of a 3-year-old girl. Now, if anyone's ever seen The Worst Cooks in America, I was watching it one day, somewhat by accident, but you have to work pretty hard being one of the worst cooks. One would think that you're a high repetitious learner, you have no concept and can't really engage in a whole lot of anything like cooking. Now, I'm no chef in the kitchen, I assure you of that, but I can boil water and I wouldn't starve. But Ariel Robinson was the worst cook. So what's the next logical conclusion? If you cannot survive in the kitchen at all, what should you do? That's right. Become a foster parent. That's what she did. And the 3-year-old that she's being charged with was in foster care at her. The young child, Victoria Rose, died as a result of multiple blunt force injuries. She was found unresponsive at the couple's home in Simpsonville, South Carolina, and died later at the Greenville Memorial Hospital. Also arrested was a gentleman by the name of Jerry Robinson. Both appeared before a judge. A no bond hold has been set, and the case will continue. I'm not sure if Ariel Robinson won any money for her participation on The Worst Cook in America, but if she did, she may want to use that money for legal fees, as she has a difficult time ahead of her. If she thought the kitchen was tough to maneuver around, welcome to the criminal justice system. And finally on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. A Florida man has been arrested after threatening his ex-boss with a twisted tea can and a metal pipe. Sean Gillis was taken into custody by the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office after making multiple threatening calls to his ex-boss. Apparently, the deputies were called to the scene and were able to overhear one of the calls where Gillis announced that he was on his way and that he had something for the victim. "I'm going to end you right now. I'm coming for you straight through the parking lot." Well, unfortunately for Mr. Gillis, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, the police were already there listening. Needless to say, when Mr. Gillis began approaching the scene, the officers made their presence known, and he was carrying a can of Twisted Tea in his right hand and holding his left hand behind his back. It turned out that Mr. Gillis had behind his back a metal pipe that was in his pants. He continued to threaten the victim verbally while the deputies arrested him. "Mr. Gillis, we understand your frustration, and we have no indication as to why you are upset with your ex-boss, but perhaps it could be because, well, maybe you have a drinking problem. Maybe you have some anger issues, and they decided to let you go. But needless to say, you cannot threaten people. And what you said is, in fact, an example of a true threat that is not protected under the First Amendment in any way. You cannot threaten people because it is direct, immediate, and it can be acted upon immediately. That is a true threat. And as we've talked about earlier today, anytime you're going to speak with somebody on the phone, particularly if you're going to threaten them, that's right, you must assume that the police are listening. And in this particular case, Mr. Gillis, they were. That's why you're our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Congratulations. If you win, you will be the winner of some cool Crime Talk merchandise that we will send to you. You can drink a lot of Twisted Tea out of one of these mugs. And bottom line is, it's good quality stuff. Thanks for watching. Have a wonderful day. We will see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.